We hold a gratitude circle at our dinner table, at my house too. We hold hands and speak our awareness of the cycles of life that made it possible for our food to grow. Our words expressing our interconnectedness because that's something my family understands as both important and sacred. Then we speak our gratitude for the people connected to that food. All those people we don't know who grew it and harvested it and packaged it and brought it to us. And then usually the gratitudes close with something like, and we're grateful to Daddy for cooking our food and that we're all home together to eat it. My family's gratitude circle doesn't usually take the turn we just heard in our story, possibly because we have just one child in the house. But what a great example that was of a good intention turning sour. Like Coyote, daughter number two very pointedly left the gifts of her sister out of her heart. This hurt her sister's feelings and created the opportunity for a conversation about what's important for the whole family. Bringing our gratitude to the forefront of our awareness is a practice many faiths advocate. Judaism, for example, teaches that there is value in taking stock in what we have, as opposed to focusing on what we lack, and that an honest accounting of what we do have will allow us to acknowledge the blessings that are part of our lives. There's no limit to what we don't have, writes Dr. Alan Morinis. And if that is where we focus, then our lives are inevitably filled with endless dissatisfaction. So the Hebrew term for gratitude, hakarat hatov, means recognizing the good. Christianity teaches that gratitude is to be given to God so that, in the words of Charles Stanley of the Christian Post, we can become what he wants us to be, unselfish, encouraged, and confident. Whether that's something God wants or something we want of each other, those are worthy goals. Theologically, this idea comes all the way from the story of the fall from the Garden of Eden, in which dissatisfaction and ingratitude caused the ever curious Eve to reach beyond the boundaries God had set for her and Adam. Christian author and blogger David Mathis writes that one of the ways that Jesus' life and death provided atonement for that fall was through his teaching and modeling of thankfulness to God. I'm reminded here of my time as a chaplain intern at a large Chicago hospital. Many of my patients were older African Americans who had filled in the religion blank on their admissions paperwork with a branch of Christianity. I would visit them and pray with them. And when I walked into their rooms and asked them how they were, regardless of how sick or tired or disheartened they were, very often their response would be, "Honey, I'm blessed." Similarly, writes Fuzia Haku on the website On Islam, when you ask a Muslim, "How are you?" they automatically reply with Alhamdulillah, which means, "Praise be to God." Islam teaches that gratitude is important and carries many blessings, such as reminding us of Allah's bounties, helping us to slow down and enjoy what we have, training our minds to focus on the right things in life, recognizing other people's favors to us, and magnifying our blessings. Buddhism agrees with many of these ideas. The website for Soka Gakkai International, which is an online Buddhist network that follows the teachings of the Lotus Sutra, says, "Gratitude is the key to unlocking a more open and rewarding perspective on life. Feelings of appreciation are always accompanied by the elevation of one's state of life and the broadening of one's perspective. And the more our life expands, the more profound our sense of gratitude becomes, to the point where we can feel appreciation even for the problems we face in life." Taoist master Mikkel Steenrod calls gratitude the most important invocation. And Jennifer Greenwood advises on the Happiness Through Humanism blog, "Don't think of gratitude as an obligation. Gratitude actually connects you more strongly to those around you and reminds you that you are not in this world alone. And so that brings me to the idea of gratitude for each other. I love the idea that gratitude connects us to each other and reminds us that we're not alone, and I'm moved to think, too, about what that really looks like, and to wonder if there's room for all of us in that idea. It's all well and good to pray, as I did earlier, that our hearts open to each other's gifts, and there are many realities in which we find ourselves needing to do some deep inner work and have some conversations to find that place of gratitude. How do I hold on to gratitude when someone in my community lights a candle and shares a joy that evokes pain or fear for me? Or when I light a candle to share a sorrow that strikes someone else as being inconsequential? What about when I find myself in deep disagreement with someone on a divisive social or political issue? Or when an issue I believe to be crucial is minimized by someone with a different set of priorities? Or when I just find myself annoyed by a personality that approaches community in a different way than I do? The Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron has said, if we learn to open our hearts, anyone, including the people who drive us crazy, can be our teacher. How does that happen? Do we look past those things that keep us from fully forming that attitude of gratitude? Or do we find a way to have gratitude in the face of them? Not in spite of them, but in full acceptance of them in their messiness. My husband and I have a little joke that we use to break the tension when we find ourselves in this place of forgetting to appreciate each other in the midst of a disagreement. When one of us, in the middle of this, remembers to take a breath and say, I love you, the other asks, because of me or in spite of me? I think he started that. It's supposed to be comic relief, and it usually works. But it's also sometimes bitter for me if I'm the one asking the question, because it can come out of a feeling of being small and mean in the disagreement, and actually feeling maybe it is in spite of me. It can come from my own doubt that I'm worthy of that love, out of a forgetting of the gifts that I bring and a lack of gratitude for my own self. It helps to know, it helps to remember that I'm partnered with someone who really does hold gratitude for me, helps me to grow into a sense of myself that I don't believe in when I'm not being my best self. It's a little like that saying, God, help me to be the person my dog thinks I am. Moses is in a local interfaith organizing group with state and national affiliates, and this congregation is a member of that group. And Moses held their annual celebration dinner on Friday evening. Willie Briscoe, a minister at the New Covenant Baptist Church in Milwaukee, and he is the president of MICA, which is a sister organization to Moses, gave the keynote speech. Reverend Briscoe talked about the very real inequities around race and poverty and education and incarceration. And he also talked about what human beings want and need. He said we all want the same things: a safe place to live, a good education, life-sustaining work, opportunity to live out our potential. And he said what we need is each other to have those things, that we need the nurturing and the support that can only come from living in community, that, in his words, we're all at our best when we're all at our best. What do we need to be at our best? We need to be believed in. Whether we're a young African-American man trying to stay employed and productive and free, or a middle-aged white activist trying to change the institutions working against that man, we need to be believed in ways that both support us and hold us accountable. We need beloved community. And that can be a tricky thing. It can be hard to be held accountable. It can be uncomfortable and it can be messy, as daughters number one and two learned. Does forming and nurturing the beloved community mean we like everyone? Does it mean we appreciate everyone? What do we do when the gifts we bring each other become obscured behind our responses to each other's personalities or opinions? And how do we love those whose gifts we don't see? Perhaps in a predictable turn, I come back to gratitude here. In an article called The Heart of Our Faith that he wrote for the UU World, our quarterly magazine, our denomination's quarterly magazine, Galen Gingrich, the co-minister at the Unitarian Church of All Souls in New York City, explained why gratitude should be the center of a lived Unitarian Universalist theology. Reverend Gingrich believes that Unitarian Universalism should be defined by gratitude because of two of gratitude's dimensions. And he wrote, "The discipline of gratitude reminds us of how utterly dependent we are on the people and the world around us for everything that matters. From this flows an ethic of gratitude that obligates us to create a future that justifies an increasing sense of gratitude from the human family as a whole. The ethic of gratitude demands that we nurture the world that nurtures us in return." He explains, too, how these two dimensions of gratitude, the discipline and the ethic, are religious, by connecting them to two deep religious impulses, a sense of awe and a sense of obligation. The experience of awe, he writes, leads to the discipline of gratitude. And the experience of obligation leads to an ethic of gratitude. We practice a discipline of gratitude when we make space to bump up against each other in the messiness of human relationship. When we see each other's humanity, not just in spite of the difficulty we sometimes have with each other, and not just because of it either, but in both. When we can appreciate best intentions that might not have resulted in the best outcomes. When we can feel the spirit of each other's efforts. When we can work together beyond disagreements and perceived slights and hurt feelings. We allow a discipline of gratitude to carry into an ethic of gratitude. It's a different understanding of gratitude than I was taught. I learned that gratitude should be based on what I have, the sense that I should be grateful for the things I have. What I didn't learn until recently is that a sense of gratitude is in itself a gift that allows us to fully open to each other. And it's a cycle, rather than being an either-or thing. I can be grateful for the loving presence of people in my life, and that gratitude allows me to more fully open to their gifts. It feeds itself. Of course, as Jane Malden told us, this can be hard work. Some of it find it hard to be thankful when we would rather be angry. And like coyotes, sometimes we need to let ourselves ride out the anger or the disappointment or whatever else is getting in the way of right relationship before we can get to the gratitude. In his book on relearning civil discourse, Healing the Heart of Democracy, Parker Palmer writes, "Given human nature and the nature of politics, there will always be people with whom dialogue is impossible. And on some days, I am one of them." I hope you find a chance to talk with your children or your siblings about their take on what we need from each other and about gratitude. And I hope that you can help them and yourselves find something to appreciate in the people around you. I'll close by repeating some of Reverend Malden's wisdom. There is something sacred about our gratitude circles. Gratitude has a healing power at our table that is more tangible than forgiveness or even ice cream. We can't honestly nourish a grudge at the same time that we nourish gratitude. So we try. May we try together. May it be so.